Good evening. First order of business tonight is a public hearing on a proposed local law number A of 2011, amending the county code in relation to road preservation by temporarily excluding certain commercial and industrial traffic that would materially injure county roads. I have people who've signed up to speak. At the end of this list, if anybody else would like to speak, you'll have a chance. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes, and Kathy Covert here will help you keep track of that. Let me just say that we are expecting that the committee chairs working on this, that's facilities and infrastructure and government operations, have discussed this issue, especially in light of last night's meeting, public meeting, and decided that we will pull the resolution from voting tonight. So we won't be voting on it tonight. The committees will go back and work on it. Nevertheless, we'd really be pleased to have your input, so we're happy that you're here tonight. And your comments will certainly be taken into account. If we do decide to revise the law substantially, then there will be a second public hearing on any revisions on a revised law. So, but for now, we'll go ahead with the comments that you have on this version. I have Frank Santelli first, and then Bob McGuire.
Better invite him up to the microphone. Yeah.
Hello. Okay. My name is Frank Santelli, and I'm a local engineer in Ithaca. And on behalf of myself and my associates, David Herrick, Andy Sharaba, and Pete Mesmer, as a local engineer and in Tompkins County. We reviewed the local law and I'd like to get into the record a white paper that we wrote to address the law more from a technical engineering standpoint as opposed to a legal standpoint. But I think we've put together a number of issues and challenges that come up to implement a local law such as has been proposed, and we'd like to get this paper into the record and distribute it as widely as we can as a help to the legislatures and committee members and other interested parties to better understand some of the issues revolving around land use or road use agreements, road use law, to hopefully help everyone to better understand the issues and hopefully come up with a program that would protect the local roads in the county and be to everybody's benefit. So that's all I've got.
And you have the paper there?
I do. Electronic copy was submitted through the clerk, and there's a number. I also provided a number of hard copies for distribution.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. If anybody has written comments, they can pass them up, and then your comments will be recorded just as you've sent them in. Bob McGuire and then Tom Giroux.
Good evening. My name is Bob McGuire. I live at 46 Whitted Road in the town of Dryden, and I wanted to speak in favor of the road preservation law that I've read. I feel it's a good law, and I would urge you to pass it. Excuse me? Okay. The reason I'm speaking is that several years ago, a neighbor of mine up on Whitted Road invited a local contractor to dump fill on his land, and we watched up to as many as 20 10-wheeler loads of fill per day, this went on for several months, come into the property. There were no restrictions on the road. When the project was over, it left the road with broken pavement and pitted. The road was never repaired. I believe the town of Dryden did not have the funds to bring it back to its original condition. I hate to see that kind of damage happen with the upcoming gas and gas drilling. You've all seen photographs, I believe, from our neighbors in Pennsylvania of what can happen to those roads. What I'm really concerned about is not that the roads not get fixed, but rather that the repair not be dumped on the backs of the local property holders, the local tax burden. I believe the law that you have now, as far as I can tell, will go a long way to remedy that, so I urge you to go ahead and pass it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. Tom Giroux, and then Kim Wetzel.
Yes, my name is Tom Giroux. I'm with Wagner Lumber Company, and I appreciate you hearing our comments tonight. Wagner Lumber Company has performed probably 200 timber harvesting projects in Tompkins County in the past 15 years. And we put about $2 million based on those projects in the pockets of local landowners. Any additional regulations are always a concern for us because additional regulations cost money. If we were to bond this road, and I might say that there is no stated bond amount, it looks like it's at the discretion of someone, I'm not sure whom, but for every $100,000 that you have to put a bond up, 1% of that comes out of the landowner's pocket. So you could consider that a tax. So if you have a $100,000 bond requirement, $1,000 comes off the value of that standing timber and goes into your pockets versus the landowner's. I understand that this probably came about due to the gas industry, and I'm very concerned that local businesses will be affected by generic laws that are put out there to protect yourselves from one specific concern, although there are other large projects I'm sure you're concerned about as well. I was also concerned about the stated number of trips. It's logistical issues basically warrant 10 trips in 3 days. Is a trip every visit in, empty, or full and included? Another trip when he leaves? If that truck is weighing 20 tons, then that sounds like two trips to me, so the ordinance isn't very clear on that. It doesn't take much to trigger it if every truck going into the site and coming out of the site would be an additional trip. So I think it would be tripped fairly easily and unnecessarily. I do like the fact that you have particular projects going under the radar. I think that's very sensible. Your concerns are large projects with lots of trucks coming in and out over a short period of time or a sustained period of time. So I think the idea of having a trigger is excellent. The final thing I'd like to mention is that forestry is generally considered an agricultural type of project. In an ag district, it is recognized by the state of New York that forestry in an ag district is a non-permittable issue. It just falls in under agriculture. I would urge you to consider waiving this particular ordinance for forestry purposes as well, based on it is an agricultural activity. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Kim Wetzel, then Marie McRae.
My name is Kim Wetzel. I'm a local business person. I've been a local business person in the community for 41 years. I operate several businesses, two of which are very big truck intensive. One is K&H Concrete, which delivers ready mix. The other is Sultana Sand and Stone, which produces aggregates. As a person that operates a number of large vehicles and someone who supplies many of the projects that are done throughout Tompkins and surrounding counties, I feel that this law as proposed would be very detrimental to my business and also to the people that I supply. The person before me from Wagner Lumber spoke about the threshold. The threshold as written could be triggered 10 truck trips per day, three or more consecutive days in a week, could be tripped by someone building a three-bedroom home in a rural setting. Between the driveway, the concrete that needs to be placed, and or the septic system, that's a very low threshold. I would urge the county to study this further. to see if possibly there isn't another way to go about this, to seek the input from people that are going to be impacted by this, particularly people like myself who are in businesses that deal in very heavy commodities, and also give the public a little more input about what's going on. I found out about this approximately a month ago, and I understand that the committee's been working on it for something on the order of 9 to 12 months. So I appreciate the county giving us the opportunity, me in particular, to speak to the board, and I would urge you to study this further and give it some more consideration before you consider voting on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Marie McCray and then Connie Wilcox.
My name is Marie McCray, and I live on a county road in the town of Dryden. And I'm here to speak in favor of a county road ordinance. I really would like to see an ordinance that is flexible enough to accommodate local business people, farmers, loggers, and at the same time protect our pocketbooks against the road destruction that's going to happen if we have the heavy industrial activity of gas drilling coming into our county. I'd like to see the ordinance done in concert with municipalities. Can we do it all together and get some sort of uniform road ordinances across the board? I'd like to see that explored. But I'd like to tell you a little short story. A couple of weeks ago, there was a thump and a boom outside of our house, and we looked out the window, and we found a big plow belly up in the side yard. John tells me that it's the second time in 29 years that a county plow has gone belly up. But the road I live on catches cars and trucks. They fall off the curb by my house pretty regularly. When this plow went belly up, the plow caught the side of the road, dug up the land, of course, in my yard, fell over, dumped the salt. It happened about 1:15 in the afternoon, and when I had to leave the house at about 6:45, they had just gotten that truck back on the road. The road was closed for 4 hours. When they got the truck out of there, they had to send a crew back the next day to pick up the salt, and in the spring they'll have to come back to repair the side of the road. Once in 29 years is okay, but what if that were to happen once a week or twice a month? The time and energy and money that it'll take to repair the roads is considerable. Thank you.
Thank you, Marie. Connie Wilcox and then Ken Zesserson.
Good evening. Connie Wilcox, a manager of Genoa Sand and Gravel, which is right on the county line, and also deputy supervisor of the town of Lansing. I believe this law was drafted with good intent, and it's aimed at making sure our roads are protected from the damage that could be possibly caused by the drilling equipment. But I feel in doing this, you haven't taken into consideration what it actually takes to conduct business in this county if you do this. You also haven't taken into consideration, if I read the law correctly, that our towns, our highway superintendents will have to get permits in order to repair their roads and pave them because they will be hauling material over county roads to do that. I agreed with Don Barber's comments last night that for the time being, perhaps you could work with TCOG and the local businesses to draft a law or to, you know, make a better draft of this law that will protect the county's infrastructure and our taxpayers, but will also allow development and the contractors to do business in this county in an affordable manner. The county wants affordable housing. But how can we expect this to happen when you add the cost of construction to the construction of this affordable housing? So I ask you to please take your time to get this right. I think we can have a good law that will protect our roads, but I don't want you to do a knee-jerk decision and pass a law that is perhaps going to be detrimental to a lot of the businesses in this county. Thank you.
Thank you, Connie. Ken Zesterson is the last person signed up.
Thank you. I'm Ken Zesterson. I'm a planning board chairman in the town of Ulysses. And I, too, would echo some of the previous comments. I would urge you to pass a law protecting local roads from the heavy traffic that would be associated with the prospect of hydrofracking. At the same time, it's a difficult thing to consider because, as we've heard, and I couldn't agree more, local businesses need these roads as well. The man who put in my septic system and does an excellent job of maintaining it is in this room, and he drives an awful big truck to my house once in a while to do what he needs to do. That's one truck. When we're talking about hydrofracking, we are talking about innumerable trucks beyond counting. It's tens of thousands, it's millions of trucks, depending on how many wells eventually get drilled here, if indeed that happens. And I would urge you to think beyond the idea of just protecting our roads and enacting local laws. Just stepping back a second, this industry, the gas and oil industry, we've been failed by the federal government, which is supposed to protect our health and welfare. This industry is exempt from the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and various other initiatives that are designed to protect us. They're exempt. They can do whatever they want. At the state level, I think were not for some of the people in this room and a few thousand others, they would have caved in too. They didn't, because we staged quite a ruckus, and we're still kind of fighting the battle. We're not sure what Cuomo's going to do. The bottom line is, I think the only way we're going to save ourselves is local government, and I mean real local government. I mean you, the Tompkins County, and I mean the town governments as well. We've been failed by the big boys and the big girls, and I think we have to save ourselves by enacting local legislation, even indeed coming up to the prospect of, quote, banning hydrofracking, which a town can do because we have land use regulations, and in Ulysses we are pursuing that very vigorously, and I would urge others in other towns to do it, and I know they are. So I just would, you're in a remarkable position. This is not just about Tompkins County. This is the problem that is going to affect the rest of history. We're moving from fossil fuel to something else, and we're not moving fast enough. And some of these problems we're dealing with, trucks are just a symptom of it. They're the things that are going to spell the future of not only our lives, but certainly our children's and grandchildren's. And I urge you to take this into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Is there anyone else who would like to address the legislature? Bring on. Just take your turns up at the mic. And state your name and where you live, please.
Thank you very much. I'm Bruno Schickel. I live in Dryden, New York. And although I spoke last night to seven of the board or the legislators here, so I'll be repeating myself a little bit, but there's four things that I think points that need to be made. One is this law, if passed, would have severe unintended consequences. Two, it's impractical to enforce. If you really start looking at it and say, how are we going to enforce this, it's completely impractical. Three, it's very, very costly. It's going to be costly to the person who's getting the permit and has to buy the bond. That cost, as a contractor, that cost will be passed along to the consumer, so it'll immediately impact the consumers in the county. And four, it'll hurt local businesses. It will put local businesses at a severe disadvantage if they are trying to, in the gravel industry in particular, if they're trying to truck their gravel to another county. It will make their cost prohibitive. So I think we all understand, but what we're trying to do here is you're attempting to find a solution for a problem we don't currently have, and I don't think there's anything wrong with planning ahead. But on the unintended consequence, this is a dragnet, and you will be affecting, if you held everybody to the letter of that law, you will be affecting, I would say, at least 50% of the new housing that gets built in this county. and on up from there. It's not unusual to have 200 or 300 or 400 truckloads of material going in and out of a site very, very easily to have that happen. I'll give you an example. I built Hospicare quite a number of years ago, and there's 600 truckloads of fill underneath that parking lot at Hospicare. And nobody would ever guess. I mean, just to fill this room would probably take 20 truckloads of material just to make a pile that fits into this room. So it's 10 loads is ridiculous. It's tiny. If you want to set a threshold, set it at 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000, and then you begin to get into some sort of sense of the problem. I was talking to Kim earlier, and I asked him how many loads of material has he taken out of his gravel pit in the last year. 200,000 tons translates into 10,000 loads of material just out of one gravel pit, and he doesn't have the largest gravel pit in this county. You have RMS, you have Pennies, you have Cayuga Crushed Stone, you have University Sand and Gravel, and there are probably some others. And so you're going about this all wrong. The other issue about enforcing it, think about it. Are you going to have somebody run around counting the number of trucks? How are you going to determine what the bond is? How big is the bond going to be? And so I think that you have a real problem on your hands if you go down the road that you're pursuing currently. And I would encourage
you, we're gonna need to wrap
to
up.
Rip up this law the way it's currently written and start over. There's got to be a more practical, cost-effective way to solve the problem that you're trying to solve. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruno. Some other folks I saw.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Everhard from the town of Caroline, and I'm a mere lowly gravel user.
Can you make sure you use the microphone, please?
Yes, sorry. There seems to be agreement on the need to get what we can passed into law before NYSEG starts issuing permits. Given the disastrous DEC cuts, it's possible that they will basically cave in at some point with no adequate revised GEIS. So I think there is some urgency here. In addition to the use and repair of the roads addressed in this law, there are other issues which can and should be put into local law if possible. If LLA is postponed, these issues probably won't be taken up until it's too late and the damage is done. For this reason, I'm in favor of amending LLA and getting it passed. I have three suggested amendments. A, as last night's discussion made clear, there is a need to be a distinction between established local businesses with specific projects and large-scale corporations with huge short-term projects. One way to do this is to simply exempt companies with a small number of employees. B, for safety reasons, all trucks operating under a permit should be required to be clearly so labeled and their cargo identified as water, fracking fluid, fracking waste, hydrochloric acid, benzene, etc. C, a lower speed limit for permitted trucks, at least during spring and fall when the roads are most vulnerable, would help reduce road damage. Now, all of the issues on infrastructure are not limited to just the wells themselves. Some further steps to address the impact might be feasible. For instance, I would like to see the establishment of a regulation against landfills, that new landfills, we got rid of the old one, that would be used for drill cuttings and other possibly radioactive waste, such as the Casella landfill in Chemung County. I would like to see established a serious fine for dumping liquids from trucks into storm drains, has had already happened apparently in Elmira, and also preventing dumping on roadways with open valves. And important is the safety training for personnel who are likely to be the first responders. These accidents can happen anywhere along the drilling food chain, pipelines, wells, storage facilities, homes, during the transport or at staging facilities. We've been pretty lucky with respect to gas-related accidents, but you don't have to go to Pennsylvania to see what can happen. For instance, in Blenheim, New York, there was a terrible accident 20 years ago. Two people were killed, 10 houses and buildings were destroyed. And it might be possible to avoid some of these problems. I would like to prevent open pits or ponds that contain non-potable water. The mosquito hazard here in the summer is bad enough without also having toxic water.
Carol, if you could wrap up.
I have one more point. I would like to see a problem has been that the drillers have taken gravel from wherever they can get it where it's convenient for them, and I would like to see that regulated so that they can't just take it wherever they have a lease, because this has resulted in a moonscape of open pits in Pennsylvania.
Thank you.
And this would also help out the local gravel providers. Good luck with your discussion, and I hope something good comes out of it.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Helen Slache. I live in the town of Ithaca, and I'm a public interest environmental attorney with Community Environmental Defense Council as well. And I believe the concept of a local road ordinance, such as the one you have in front of you, is very important. We need to protect roads and bridges. There isn't any discussion per se about bridges in this road law, but there are a number of already structurally deficient and functionally obsolete bridges in the county, and this sort of high-impact truck traffic could have very detrimental safety impacts. On the point of regulations costing money, in the first instance, we all pay for the roads. The public owns the roads. And while they are effective and useful for businesses to use for their profit-making activities, in fact, if it costs the money to use the roads and that makes certain activities more expensive, that may be the price we have to pay. You know, their activities carry with them costs, and the fact that a cost gets shifted to the public doesn't make it free. The cost remains there. There's the cost to repair the road. It's simply who bears that cost. One way to avoid some of the bond fees, which wouldn't go to the county, the bond would be put up by a bank. The bank collects that 1% fee, not the county, would be to have an option in the law for a voluntary road use agreement. So you have the law that says here it is, but you know we set forth the option of entering into a voluntary road use agreement and have the law set forth the minimum standards for such a road use agreement. But that would be something that a local contractor might be much more interested in doing than someone who is just sort of in and out of the community. So you could look at that on the enforcement issue. There could be provisions for self-reporting by neighbors from the project, and that enforcement might be triggered by reports from a community, and then you know investigation might proceed from there, because presumably this would go on for more than 3 days. The town of Afton, New York, recently passed a road preservation law after several public hearings and iterations that include some of these features of having the voluntary road use agreement and this reporting. So you might want to take a look at what they've done as some tweaks to what you're doing. But I do think, despite the fact that it might actually cost gravel haulers and other people some money, these truck trips do have impacts on our roads. The roads needs to be repaired. And rather than all of us paying for it, I think the people inflicting the damage or their customers should be the ones that pay. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Is there anyone else?
Bill Podolka, Town of Caroline. I've already heard some of the points that men wanted to mention here, so I'll just be really brief. I just want to compliment the town officials, the county officials, for taking a look at this issue, because I've been hearing from town officials in Tompkins County and elsewhere just saying the existing structure we have just isn't adequate to help compensate for the kind of damage they're seeing down in Pennsylvania. So I think it's important to look ahead. And Helen's pointing exactly right, that the burden of fixing the road shouldn't be shifted to the taxpayers. So I'm here as a taxpayer saying, I know it's a cost to the trucking companies, but I don't want it to be my cost instead. So I think that what I encourage the county to do is I think there needs to be some adjustment to the laws proposed, involve some of those local businesses as stakeholders, but to me it doesn't matter if the activity is causing significant damage to the road, whether it's gravel hauling or logging or gas drilling or rolling baby carriages, all right, if that particular activity causes significant damage, then that activity needs to fund the repairs needed. And so in that process, you need to incorporate an understanding of the different kinds of roads, whether, you know, how able are the different roads able to bear the loads? So maybe there'll be a different level of bonding or whatever, different level of truck traffic when this triggers on different kinds of roads at different times of years. Because we all know that in mud season, spring and fall, it's going to be a lot worse than in the dry season of summer. So it needs to be a certain amount of flexibility in the law as to when the threshold is reached. And that's where you can get some advice from the guys who use the roads a lot. But I do think we need to do something, or we're all going to be stuck, us taxpayers are going to be stuck putting the bill we don't want to pay.
Thank you, Bill.
I'm Dennis Mix. My brother and I have Mix Brothers Trucking. We're located in the town of Dryden. I live in the town of Dryden. Just like to point out that we pay about 60 cents per gallon minimum diesel fuel tax on our units. Currently, we're doing about 1,000 gallons a day, so it's about $600 a day for diesel fuel tax. We, at this time, as of last year, paid out over $70,000 for registration, overweight permits, licensing, just exorbitant amount of fees that we have done. A typical house job right now, we're on a small job right now, and we have already done 79 loads on that job. There's probably a minimum of 25 to 30 loads to go. So to restrict us, everything is always so weather contingent on what we do with our work. To restrict us to 10 loads per day could delay the project for a few days to a few weeks, plus we would have to maybe hire more help or pass off on the work. And that's one of the main things I want to emphasize. As far as this being, I believe, is mostly based on the potential gas drilling that's going to come up, hopefully, in this county. Our company last fall worked indirectly for Chesapeake Gas Company. We had, I believe it was, 8 trucks for 1 month hauling material to a blacktop plant and hauling blacktop out of a New York State plant to Pennsylvania. Chesapeake was footing the entire bill for it. So as far as those companies coming into town and leaving the taxpayers holding the bag, it's not entirely true. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Anyone else?
Hi, my name is Mike Atchie. I'm from Binghamton, New York. I represent Chesapeake Energy. I actually wanted to just drop off some written comments regarding the law. I brought one copy. I can certainly provide additional comments for the record if, or additional copies if needed. Essentially, I'll just run down a few quick items that are in our written comments. As you know, Chesapeake's a natural gas company. We're one of the largest producers in the country. We're currently dedicating a lot of resources to operating Northeast Pennsylvania. We're hopeful that we can bring that benefit to New York State. We have a very successful track record working with local municipalities in methods to protect their roads and eliminate those costs to taxpayers. Within the local law that was drafted by Tompkins County, which we think is a great move to develop that framework for protecting roads, we believe that within that local law, there should be the provision for a road use maintenance agreement. It's a strategy that we've used very effectively across the border. We now have 45 townships signed up with road use maintenance agreements, and they're working. In the past year, in 2010, we repaired, upgraded, or maintained 300 miles of roads, expending $95 million in a one-year time frame. So we're adhering very strictly to those road use agreements, and within the framework of your local law, there are provisions that could be put in place to have a road use maintenance agreement entered into by the gas companies. I'm working closely with some other counties, Steuben, Chemung County, regarding the development of their local law and these road use agreements. They're all kind of at the same stage you're at. They're considering the local law with the permitting process and then a road use maintenance agreement option. So you're working in the same path that some of the other counties surrounding you are doing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me make it clear, if you hand in what you've said, that gets recorded in in the record. Something like this will get copied to legislators, but it doesn't actually go in the minutes unless that's what you've actually said here. So, all right. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the legislature? Well, thank you all very much for coming. This closes the public hearing. If anybody has comments, additional comments, or for the public, they can send them to Kathy Covert at the Legislature Office, 320 North Tioga Street, or ccovert@tompkins-co.org, and she'll make sure that the appropriate committee members receive the information. Thank you all very much for coming. I'd like to call the February 1st meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members, please.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Chaff?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has asked to be excused. Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I have a couple of proclamations tonight, and the first one, I'd like Carolyn Cox to join me at the front. Carolyn is president of the Tompkins County Public Library Foundation's Board of Directors. And this is a proclamation about Library Lovers Month in Tompkins County. Whereas libraries enable individuals to make informed decisions about their life, about their self-governance, by promoting unrestricted access to information and by serving as community centers for lifelong learning, and whereas in a world undergoing constant change, libraries provide enduring connections to the past and future of our communities, nations, and civilizations, and whereas the expansion of electronic networks linking libraries and their resources makes possible better and more easily accessible information for library users around the world, and whereas libraries provide entry to important research about health, economics, housing, the environment, and countless other areas to support better living conditions and to help people lead longer, more productive, and fulfilling lives, and whereas libraries support a competitive workforce with basic literacy programs, computers, and other resources to help children and adults learn to find, evaluate, and use information they need for their jobs, health, education, and other needs, and whereas many libraries offer preschool story hour and summer reading programs to encourage children to begin a habit of reading that will serve to benefit their personal and professional lives, and whereas 10,077,000 people in the state of New York and 39,140 residents in Tompkins County have library cards, now therefore I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim February as Library Lovers Month in Tompkins County and urge all of our citizens to visit libraries and thank a librarian for making this unique and wonderful institution possible.
You for your continuing support of the library, and as a small token of our thanks from the Foundation Board, you have a button that I encourage each of you to wear throughout February, Library Lovers Month, and if you see anyone who's interested in getting a button, urge them to come to the library, get a button, and yes, thank a librarian. Or go to the website and find out about more activities that we have planned for this month. In particular, I encourage each of you to send in a statement about why you love the library. We're collecting the stories, and throughout the rest of the year, we will be using them in a variety of ways to encourage our community to continue to support the library, not just through taxes, but also through their support, through gifts and use and advocacy. So with that, I want to thank you again. Good night.
Thank you very much, Carolyn. And I have a proclamation for the 211 service in Tompkins County. I don't see Ed Swayze or anybody else from the service here. Well, I just want to say that this is a proclamation proclaiming February 11, 2011, as 211 Day in Tompkins County, and just note the date there. So we'll get that over to the 211 service.
Well, we can present that as the health day.
Great. Okay, tomorrow. Thanks, Frank. Very good. All right. As far as the orders of the day, we do need to have an I'd like to ask for an executive session at the end of this meeting to discuss labor negotiations. Are there any public who'd like to address the legislature during public privilege of the floor, separate from that public hearing about any topic that's on your mind? All right. Thank you. Legislators. Has anybody interested? Pat?
I just wanted to mention that we do have a municipal official here.
That's right.
I don't know whether Connie wanted to say anything from the town of Lansing or not, because she already spoke, but I just didn't want to miss her.
Thank you, Pat. And I'd seen that. I was thinking that legislative privilege came next, but you're right. Municipal official is next on the agenda. Connie, would you like to address us as from the town?
I don't really have a lot to say, but I would like to say that we very much appreciate Pat as our legislator. Pat has been coming to all of our meetings and keeping us updated on what's going on with the county, and she was really great during budget time, even though we didn't really like the budget, but at least we were informed as to what was going on, and she's kept us informed. She actually mentioned this transportation law last month at our meeting, so we really appreciate that. We appreciate her coming, and it keeps us updated with what's going on with the county. So thanks, Pat.
Thank you. I'm sure you guys didn't plan that ahead of time, right?
I didn't know.
Well, but thank you, Connie. Do pass back to the town board that we have this slot during our legislature meetings. We'd be happy to have Scott or anybody else come at any time. Thank you very much. That was it, Pat? That was your? Okay,
yep.
Great. All right, Pam.
Yes, I just wanted to thank the people who organized the meeting last night, the public meeting that was held about this proposed road law. The meeting and the response to that meeting, we had a lot of people come, there's a lot of interest, and it reminds us, as I think sometimes we need to be reminded, how important it is for us to reach out to the people
who we represent and others in the county. When we are passing legislation that will have an impact on their lives. And I really was very grateful to all the folks for showing up last night and expressing their opinions, and again, showing up again tonight, because I think that's what our democracy is about, and I have no doubt that we will come up with a better law as a result of the input that we got last night. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Pam. Nathan.
I have two things. First, I agree with Pam. That meeting yesterday was incredibly informative. I walked in there not thinking that I knew a lot of things, and walking out realizing that there's so much more that I need to know, and that time really will, if we bring in the additional stakeholders, really will improve this law. I wanted to talk very shortly about Medicaid. Today, the governor talked about his budget, and as you saw probably in his editorial, in his opinion piece, he talked about the growth in Medicaid spending. So I was talking to Joe today, and he gave me a copy of Richard Ravitch's report from September 20th, 2010, which talks about Medicaid. And I just want to give you a few bullet points so that to improve our understanding of the very complicated aspects of Medicaid. So first, Medicaid is actually, we get a federal match for Medicaid. And in New York State, it's about 50%. With the stimulus program, it went up to about 62-63%. But we only get 50%. A lot of states, most states, get more. And the reason why is that it's actually based on our income versus the federal income. And because we have so many high-income earners in New York State, it makes our income appear a lot larger than it may be compared to the number of citizens that we actually have. And so as a result, we get only a 50% match, when other states get sometimes up to 75% of a match. Now, long-term care in Medicaid, people think of Medicaid, I mean, Medicaid was started as a program for those that were on welfare, basically to have health insurance. Now, in New York State, it is long-term care is roughly half the cost for Medicaid, and so and that aspect of it is not under a managed care or any type of cost control system. Okay, the majority of beneficiaries. Most of the people on Medicaid only account, you know, 50 plus percent only account for about 17% of the costs and are in a managed care system. But 25% are on a fee-for-service system and account for the majority of the spending. And this includes the seriously mental ill and people with comorbidities. And people over 65 on Medicaid are 15% of enrollees, but they account for about 40% of the cost. And that includes, you know, nursing home care. These are dual eligibles. So these are people over the age of 65 who have both Medicare and Medicaid, but because they have spent down their assets or through accounting tricks have got their moved their assets to their children and now can use Medicaid to basically stay inside of a nursing home. Right. And then here's the big thing, is that rate setting, as the governor said, is done by statute, and it's done off of a complicated formula that was updated in 2009 but really hadn't been changed since 1981. And just to give you a comparison, Medicare has changed greatly in that time period. Medicare used to be based off a system where the hospitals basically said how much it costs to do something, and the federal government reimbursed them for it. Now Medicare is we use a DRG system where every single element that you could possibly think of has a cost associated with it, right? And those costs, that cost is developed by an independent commission that recommends that change to Congress. In New York State, it's very different. Every single change has to be approved by the New York State Legislature, which creates a huge political fight anytime we try to do any cost control measures. So I thought that would be just, that was a quick primer on Medicaid, because this will be a major topic of discussion, if not just in this budget, but especially when laws come down the pike to talk about to talk about the Medicaid formula moving forward. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Brian.
Thanks, Nathan. I always like following Nathan because I know how little I do know about topics such as that. But it kind of segues kind of nicely because I watched Governor Cuomo today with his budget presentation, and Medicaid was certainly a big part of it. But in summary, it just appears as though state government is going to change a lot. And whether it's good or whether it's bad, it appears as though it's heading that way. With the tax cap, that appears as though that's getting a foothold. Things like that, those are things that we're going to have to obviously deal with, and we've been talking about them for a long time. County government is probably going to have no choice but to follow suit, and county government may look a whole lot different in the near future than it does today. So I guess I've been spending a lot of time personally thinking about, we're always talking about, geez, we really don't want to make cuts, or what do we cut, and things of that nature, things that are negative thoughts, at least to me they are. And I've kind of shifted gears myself into let's not worry about what we're going to cut. Let's try to figure out the core programs, the core things that we want to keep, that we need to keep for the county, and work from there instead of working from the back and trying to cut that way. Let's figure out what's important to all our constituents, and make sure that we preserve them when we start to get into our, in the not-too-distant future, our budget projections, budget deliberations, and so forth. But I truly do believe that in just the 4 years that this group is going to be one legislature, that government, state government, county government, and on down the line is going to be markedly different at the end than what it was at the beginning.
Thank you, Brian. I would agree. Peter, Mike, Carol?
I have a quick question, Nathan.
Yes.
Have I been confused to believe that Medicaid is basically about health services for poor people?
That's what it, in its inception, that's what it was made for. But then, I forget exactly which year, but I think it was in the 70s, we added the ability for, as long as the states were willing to match the dollar amount, that long-term care could be counted. And so long-term care in New York State, as I said, is about 50% of the cost. A lot of states chose not to go down that road and don't have as many services that they provide.
So that's for people of all income levels, is that correct?
Well, what happens, it's income-based, but what happens is that there's the spend down. And the spend down means that even middle-class people will, you know, spend down their assets and then take advantage of the program. Yeah.
Okay, Mike?
I wanted to take a second report on the Tompkins County Civil War Sesquicentennial Commemoration Commission. That's the full title of it. Our Civil War Commission that this legislature established. I'm one of the co-chairs with Carol Kamen, the other co-chair. We have been meeting monthly, and we have a number of projects underway. We were very disappointed that the state of New York failed to fund a sesquicentennial commemoration commission for the state. So what commemorations there will be are going to be local in the state, like our groups and our projects. Other states are making quite a deal of this 150th anniversary of the Civil War over the full four-year period. We know about the Civil War Nurses Fund for TC3 that we have established as part of this, which will fund scholarships for students, and also hopefully, if we get enough money, will fund a professorship or help to fund a professorship in the nursing school for the Civil War nurses. We have a goal, and I want to tell you about it. That goal is for every member of this legislature to be a contributor to the Civil War Nurses Fund for TC3. We're not asking any particular amount, but we would like to see 100% participation. And I have the forms that you can fill in and send in your check. And we'd like Cortland County Legislature to do the same thing. We're also, we have a group in the commission that is working on replacing headstones for Civil War soldiers that have deteriorated, and that involves documenting various things, taking pictures of the deteriorated headstone, or if they're missing, sending them into the federal government and receiving new stones at no cost, but which have to be then set, of course. We're working on a lecture series, which we're planning for 4 years. We're hoping to have two lectures, and they may be panel discussions, too, on different Civil War topics that would take, as the years progress, in unison with the 1860s. We'll be talking about things like emancipation, or what was going on in Tompkins County during the election of Lincoln, or what was happening during the recruitment efforts that were made. So we're looking forward to bringing in some folks. We don't have any money at the commission other than what this legislature has generously given us, but it doesn't give us a wide breadth of things. But we're going to have some people in to do that, and I think they'll be exciting. The first one will be in April, and then we think again in September. The other thing I wanted to tell you is that the Civil War Commission has had a number of people. We've had some people go off the commission and come back on. We lost our original two co-chairs. One moved out of the area, and one was not able to continue. But we're back. We're back at it. We're going to make Tompkins County proud. The other thing I wanted to say, we're trying to work up a website. So once we get that in play, more people will be able to see what we're up to. Took a little longer than I wanted to, but I thought you ought to have a report on that.
Thank you very much, Mike, and really appreciate your agreeing to co-chair that important group. Thank you. Carol?
Hi, yes. I wanted to give a little bit of an update on some other gas drilling activities. My thought was that if some of you have had your interest piqued in learning more about the specifics of some of these aspects of gas drilling and how it will impact our community, boy, have I got a committee for you. We have groups and people and task forces and subcommittees in our community looking at everything in great detail, spending a lot of time doing it, and I want to thank all of the people who are involved in that. That includes our staff, it includes members of the public, it includes members of businesses, and other interests who have something to say, and it's all good information on everything from public safety to environmental health to land use. I spent this morning, and we probably could use more as a client group for Professor Susan Christofferson's class. She is looking at local and regional economic development and other impacts, with the aim of assisting local policymakers, and they're outlining sort of their next 6-month plan of work, and I think that will include housing. So there are people, she would like people who can weigh in and talk a little bit to her graduate students and to her and her other researchers looking in depth at that, at tax policy, property tax, sales tax, other tax, and so that's one activity. There's TCOG task force has now set up, and you can find on the website the work groups that they have established. I think there are 6 different ongoing work groups. If you go through our legislature page to TCOG, there is, and then the gas drilling link there. You know, and again, those groups all look for members and people who have an interest in each of these aspects. In particular, I am heading the work group that is looking at assessment and land valuation. Some of the considerations, where are my notes on that, Jay Franklin and our fine folks in our assessment department are going to be, already are contending with in terms of how do we keep assessments equitable and fair across the board, what information does he use, what does the state ask us to do, how will this impact ultimately our tax base, up or down. Real estate, we have some realtors, including the president of the Board of Realtors involved with that. We've heard something about measurement for both purposes of royalties, payment of royalties to individual landowners will be dependent on how the outflow is measured, and that also then impacts on assessment and our tax base as well, if that is correct. Ag exemptions, splitting of subsurface rights. As people sell property and move out of the county, how are they? Are they keeping some of these rights? And who do we send a bill to for which portion of the property bundle of property rights? And the upcoming topic will be financing. We've got some bankers and real estate attorneys coming and talk to us. Any of these things, if any of you have an interest that's been piqued tonight, please get in touch with me, Martha. Liz Thomas, who heads the TCOG group, or look on the website and please get involved. And then lastly, I brought in a copy that I can leave in the legislature office of the poetry book that Gail Holst-Warhoft, our poet, our new poet laureate, referred to and read from. It's actually a very wonderful, nice, accessible collection of poetry that was put together by not just Cornell-related local poets over the years. It was 2006 the selection was put together, but it's very accessible poetry, so I urge you to take a glance at it. I'll leave it in the back for all of you. Thanks.
Thank you, Carol. Anyone else? We have no special presentation tonight. From my report, just a couple of things. Several of us are going to NYSAC next week, and it's great that I think Frank and Peter and Carol and Will and I are going, and Joe is going, David Squires. So thanks to you folks for taking the time. We are trying to get meetings with, trying to get some lobbying meetings set up. We figure we can meet with our own delegation here. We're trying to get Jim Seward and Mike Nazzolio and Tom O'Mara to come here. In fact, Joe will mention a meeting we have set up with O'Mara for next week, or for this week. But we thought while we're going to be in Albany, we're going to try to meet with Dean Skelos and Sheldon Silver. Why not? So Frank is working on Leader Skelos. Barbara Lipton is working on trying to get an appointment with Sheldon Silver for us. So we'll see how far up the food chain we can get. Last week, the Council of Governance, TCOG, passed a tax cap resolution. It was based on the resolution that we passed last fall. But we did add information about the school districts, and I felt that was important. We got some information from Ithaca School District and Lansing and added some of their input into that resolution. So it really was a joint statement from all the local property tax levying jurisdictions. And just one other thing, on February 16th, there will be a forum, the League of Women Voters monthly meeting will be about health care. February 16th, a Wednesday, 7 o'clock at the Beverly Livesey Room, the impact of health care reform. Where are we and where do we go from here? I'll be on the panel along with Beverly Chin from the Health Planning Council, Dr. Clay Pack from the Health Department, and Rebecca Elgie. So that'll be in the press, but I just thought you might be interested to know that. That's my report. Any questions? Okay. I have appointments. Thank you, Kathy. Chair's appointments that come up every year. The Workforce Investment Board, Martha Turnbull, Ellen O'Donnell, Richard Bowman, Patrick McKee. Tompkins County Area Development Board of Directors, Will Burbank. Chamber of Commerce, Martha Robertson and Jim Dennis, alternate. Cooperative Extension Service, Will Burbank and Dave McKenna. Local Advisory Board on Assessment Review for Caroline and Danby, Frank Proto, Newfield and Enfield, Dave McKenna. Groton, Brian Robison, Dryden, Mike Lane, Martha Robertson, Town of Ithaca, Will Burbank, Dooley Kiefer, and Peter Stein. Lansing, Pat Pryor and Dooley Kiefer. Ulysses, Jim Dennis, and the City of Ithaca, Carol Chalk, Kathy Luz Herrera, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Pam Magasey, and Nathan Shinagawa. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair, and Ethics Advisory Board, Dooley Kiefer, Chair. So, thank you, Kathy. County Administrator Report, Joe Marianne.
I have several items in my report tonight. Many of those items relate to what's happening in Albany right now, but not all the items. As I'm thinking about the weather and hearing what was said about librarians and how we ought to thank librarians for the work they do, I'm thinking about the way the weather is going to be over the next 24 hours. If we get a chance, we ought to thank those plow drivers, too, who really do a phenomenal job in a very difficult set of circumstances. So at least give them sway as you're driving down the road, and they are, too, if you can't have a chance to thank them directly. I do want to tell you that David Squires informs me that our health consortium plan has been featured in the state comptroller's newsletter as an example of smart shared service cost-saving measures that can be taken and as an example for other communities. So we are getting good attention because of the hard work that's been done over the past several years on that. With respect to events in Albany, the governor's budget was presented today, but yesterday, before the governor released his budget, the state Senate did take action on a property tax cap that is consistent with what the governor had proposed. It was passed rather overwhelmingly by the Senate. There is, I guess to spare the euphemisms, lip service to mandate relief, but no real mandate relief that's been tied to this property tax cap. NYSAC is looking at the details. There may be some exemptions in the cap for welfare programs, our safety net and family assistance programs. There may be a rollover policy in this cap, where if you don't fully exhaust your cap in 1 year, you might have access to it in a subsequent year. But in terms of providing relief to the pressure points that force county governments to exceed those caps and really where we want to be with our levies, I don't see any evidence of that in this bill, and I know you don't either. So we have a lot of work to do on that front. With respect to the cap, I think many of you may remember this chart that we prepared when Senator O'Meara came to see us. I'm going to pass it around. It shows what is our conundrum. We have two items in our budget, Medicaid and pensions, that alone exceed the cap, next year's cap, by a factor of three. Our cap will be something in the neighborhood of $500,000. These two items alone, which will not be affected by any of the proposals currently in place in Albany, will exceed the cap by a factor of three. They'll go up by $1.5 million. So, again, in terms of tying mandate relief to the property tax cap, we have a lot of work still to do. With respect to the governor's budget that was presented today, I think anybody who watched that would agree it was a strong presentation by the governor, who seems willing to take on tough decisions. So that's good. Generally, it looks like most state operations have taken a 10% cut, and most everything else has taken a 2% cut. Now, that's a generality. As you know, those kinds of simple formula issues are very easy to see in some other budgets like cities, aid to cities and so forth. It's very easy to see those. In the case of a county budget, we have to go program by program, formula by formula, to understand the real impact of this budget on us. I'll give you a quick sampler of the quick feedback that's coming to us from departments. It looks as if we've lost all of our aid to assessment, which is $60,000 this year, and we had expected $140,000 next year. And you recall how tight that assessment budget was for 2011. And we think we've lost 10% of our probation aid. That's about $35,000. That's almost as much as one probation officer costs. Our aging office has lost, we think, $47,000 through the New York Connects program. The CHA has been singled out in the governor's budget for a cut in aid. We're not sure how much that will mean. We've already assumed a significant cut in state aid in our CHA. We don't know if this means more or not, but the CHAs were singled out in the governor's budget as an example of things that will have to be cut. TC3, and that our relationship is indirect with TC3, a significant impact on the TC3 budget. It looks like a 10% cut, another 10% cut in FTE aid. That's $925,000 in additional aid losses to a college that's already lost $2.5 million over the past 12 months. This would represent a 24% aid cut over the last 2 years to TC3. So they have a significant impact that comes out of this budget. That's about all I can tell you on this budget now. We need to get through it. We need to dig through it. Patricia Carey's in Albany today. The Welfare Association is meeting. State officials will be briefing them on specific programmatic impacts as a part of this conference. So we'll be able to tell you more about social services, I hope, shortly. A couple of other items. The mortgage tax, Mike Lane asked a very good question at the last meeting about our request to have a home rule action taken on an increase in the mortgage recording tax. The question was, does this legislature have to pass a resolution to kick off that process? You may recall I had sent a letter asking for the kickoff. The question was, do we have to pass a resolution here? We do not. The letter will suffice. Now, if there's a bill, we will have to take action here to say that's what we would like you to approve. And at that point, the state would presumably take action, although I will tell you, the word coming out of Albany right now is the state Senate may well take a similar position on the mortgage tax this year as they did last year, which is to say no to any home rule request that involves a new tax or increased tax rates. If that's the case, We haven't assumed any of that revenue for this year, but we certainly have in our minds assumed that we will have that in place for next year, and that's about $900,000 worth of revenue. Quickly to the end of this long report, retreats. We'd like to do a couple of retreats, almost, not quite, but almost back-to-back. We would like to do a department head legislative retreat sometime in either the week of the 21st of February or the 28th of February to talk about topics that don't relate to budgets. And then we would like to come back in late April to have a legislative department head retreat to talk about things that do relate to the budget. And we'll be polling you on your availability for those retreats soon. In fact, I think the first letter's out now. If you could respond to that poll by the 7th of this month, that would be great. Finally, we do have a meeting set up with Senator O'Meara here. I think it'll be in these chambers on Thursday this week at 4 o'clock. We're also narrowing a couple of times with Assemblywoman Lifton to meet with her sometime in the middle part of this month. But the O'Meara meeting will be here Thursday at 4 o'clock. That's my report. Thank you.
Frank and then Pat.
Joe, first, can you repeat the dates of those two meetings again with O'Meara and Lifton?
O'Meara is this Thursday at 4 p.m. in these chambers. Barbara Lifton, one date is the 17th, one possible date is the 17th, time is 2 o'clock, and we are uncertain about a second alternative. We're still working with her office on.
So that one isn't confirmed yet.
No.
Okay. Second question. Joe, as far as the state is concerned, in light of what the governor just released, the current budget that we're under right now that doesn't expire till the end of March, how are we doing on reimbursements and contracts?
I'll defer to my my colleague, Mr. Squires.
I want to thank the state for sending us $42 last week. your favorite department, the health department, Frank, I believe we got aid. They reimbursed us through the end of 2009.
That was the latest.
December, yeah. And so we're about, well, we'll be a year behind now. They haven't been paying bills consistently for most programs, even the Department of Social Services, which we pay out hundreds of thousands of dollars each week, $181,000 every week for Medicaid, our Medicaid wire. And last week I didn't get $181,000 from New York State. This week we got about $300,000 in, half of which was through Office of Mental Health, which is sort of like the money we pass through to outside agencies.
Right.
So the only thing that's keeping us afloat right now is not New York State. It's sales tax and the beginning of property tax payments.
David, how about agencies? Are you aware of any agency any update on agency contracts at all? To our, you know, the agencies in our community through the coalition or whatever?
No, I'm not.
No. Thanks.
But I will say, because of the state's budget, I glanced through the budget briefing, and I wanted to make it, there was, at the end of the local assistance section, there was a paragraph saying that while there were reductions in county aid to local communities, the Medicaid cap totally offset those costs because the growth of Medicaid, which has been capped at 3% a year, offsets the cuts the state has taken out of us. So that
we should thank them.
We should thank the state for that.
Did they have a suggestion as to where we should put the $42?
Right.
Do you have a suggestion as to where we should put the $42?
It came in
Pat?
Cash, Frank.
This question is for Joe. Joe, the comments that you made about the state budget and the figures and so on that you mentioned, do you have those any place in a form that could be sent to us electronically?
Not yet. This just, the responses began to come in around 3:30 today in emails. We will compile that and we will make it available in a form that can be circulated, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joe. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
Just a few points. I had told the GEO committee at our last meeting that Susie and I were putting together a review of our 2010 family court practice, but I thought I'd say a word or two about the extent of it, because most people probably don't realize it. So far, well, in 2010, we had over 100 new JD and PINS petitions. JD, as you may know, are juvenile delinquency petitions. PINS are persons in need of supervision, which are youths who require court intervention but didn't necessarily commit a crime. So we had over 100 new cases last year. That doesn't include violations. I don't have a final number on violations, but it's probably more than 50. And, of course, every case includes writing petitions, presenting them to the court, sometimes going to trial, hearings, dispositions. So we're doing about 150 cases a year. That's remained pretty steady, but that's a pretty good workload, if you could imagine. And the numbers they go up and down over years. They haven't changed dramatically. 2010 was somewhat busier than 2009. But that area of our business remains very busy, and I really don't talk about it very frequently, but just to remind everybody that it exists. Second point I had was about the meeting last night. Pat and Michael had asked me to come and explain the local law, and I honestly thought like two or three people would be there. But in fact, it was very well attended, and you know, a lot of members of the public got to speak and express what they really felt about the law. I thought it was really good in that it really seemed to be like democracy at its true self, where members of the public are just speaking freely and telling you what they don't like about your law. I mean, frankly, most of them were more negative than positive. But I think that's a really good thing to have, you know, members of the public come in and explain how the law affects them and what they think should be changed. And it really seemed to serve exactly the purpose that it should serve. So I was happy that we did that. That's my report.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Any questions? All right, David, you want to come finish your report?
No.
That was okay. Thank you. All right, thanks very much. All right, do we have any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Carol.
Yeah, I'd like to withdraw Resolution L, I believe it is. That's the adoption of the local law A of 2011, amending the county code. Are you not going to read this?
No, it's F, right?
F. Sorry, F. I need my reading glasses.
Okay.
That has come to us through a great deal of work from government operations and F&I. It's on your agenda tonight through F&I, but I will check with my colleague, Mike Lane.
Okay, so it's withdrawn.
Yeah, to concur.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? All right, then I'll read the consent agenda. If you have anything that would like to be pulled, just call out. Resolution A, approval of 2011 succession of members of the county legislature to serve in the absence of the chair and vice chair. Resolution B, acceptance of 2011 annual criminal justice alternatives to incarceration, CJA-ATI consolidated service plan. And so appointments, Environmental Management Council, Steve Nicholson. Personal Emergency Response Service Board, Mary Russo. Community Mental Health Services Board, Paula Winner. Developmental Disability Subcommittee, Janet Lynch. Family Court Advisory Council, Louise Miller. Criminal Justice Advisory, Alternative Incarceration Board, Diana McComb, Dina Bodner, and Peter Stein. Traffic Safety Committee, Pam McAsey, Brian Robison, Peter Stein. Stop DWI Advisory Board, Stu Bergman, Brian Robison. Local Emergency Planning Committee, Peter Stein, and Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Martha Robertson and Peter Stein. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Dooley moves, Frank seconds. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you very much. That is unanimous. Susie, you're here for public safety report?
I'm here.
No. You're out of here?
I was here in case anyone had questions on the animal service.
I think probably not. So we're good. All right. So thanks, Susie. Let's go to government operations. Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Jonathan mentioned about the public meeting we had last night on the road preservation law, and I would certainly concur with his comments. It was a very productive meeting. We had probably 40 people there, I would guess. It was Carol and I. Carol was chair of the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, and myself as Government Operations Chair took the comments and listened to folks. There was a lot of concern at the meeting about the law, much of which you've heard at the public hearing tonight. I think we want to take it back and see if we can make it a better law to propose and come back to this legislature for a new public hearing in the future. Hopefully not to take a lot of time to do that, but we'd like to review this and not to have what one person said tonight, unintended consequences. So that was what happened last night. Thanks to Marsha Lynch and Joe and Jonathan and Bill Sesney for all being there and helping us with that meeting. The Government Operations Committee met on January 20th for the first meeting of the new rendition of the committee. We invited in Dan Kogan from the City of Ithaca from their Charter Committee, who's working on their redistricting effort over there, to report to us. And we agreed to work with that committee about what we will need to be looking at in a redistricting effort once the new census figures are out. Redistricting is on our minds. A number of us went over to hear the presentations made by the State League of Women Voters officers who came in and talked to us. I think there were five or six legislators that went to that. They were talking about the state and congressional redistricting, but they also mentioned that there are some counties that have taken on, they mentioned Suffolk in particular, taken on a local law about an independent commission, something like we're trying to accomplish here. We're beginning to get more names for a potential list, and we can certainly add to that if folks know people who might want to be a part of an independent committee. Most of the rest of what we did is in the resolutions that we have tonight.
Mike, if you could take Resolution D for the benefit of staff who have to leave. And then go back to C and any questions on your report.
Glad to do that. Resolution D is the appropriation from the contingent fund to support the development and implementation of the corporate compliance plan for Tompkins County government. And I so move.
Is there a second? Jim seconds.
Second.
I'll just say that the corporate compliance is resolution here is having to do with federal requirements in order to receive reimbursement for things like Medicaid. And we need some assistance in making sure that we are doing all the things that the federal government will require during audits, and that if we didn't, we could lose substantial money. And we are proposing to contract with the Bineski firm, who we've dealt with before and had good marks here, and they were also the low bidder on this contract.
Frank.
Mike, can you say...
Did I say the wrong one? I'm sorry. Joe, would you correct me, please?
I will. The Bonadio Group, who also did the compliance work for the mental health department.
All right. I apologize. I had the wrong group, but it was someone we were familiar with.
Yes.
Try it again.
Go ahead.
Mike, can you say what the impact of this might be with regard to us, the legislative members?
We have to vote to spend taxpayer money.
No, but as far as you know, when I think of compliance, I'm thinking of what we have to do with the bank. Will we have responsibilities as legislators under the compliance piece? And I think the answer is yes. Do you have any idea what those might be?
Yeah, you'll need to be informed of all the policies and procedures that are put in place to ensure compliance with the federal laws and regulations. There will have to be ongoing reports to the legislature. I think there will be legislative involvement in training. So, yes, you will be involved in this process. Yes.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you.
Any other questions on Resolution D? It's a roll call vote. Are we ready to vote? Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Would anyone like to be recorded as no? Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you, Mike.
I'll just mention that Jim reminded me the Vineski firm was with the Chaz consultant. Mm-hmm. That's where I got it confused.
Okay. So first, any questions on your report? I think Frank has his hand up.
Yeah, it's more of a thank you, Mike, and to Carol as well, for hosting the meeting last night. I think Pat and I were pretty pleased with the turnout. There were about, I think I counted at one point, closing in on 41 individuals that some drifted in and out. But I really want to thank you because I know we were a little adamant, and as I said earlier today, we were probably pleasantly annoying in order to set that up. So thank you for doing it.
All right, Frank, you say jump and we say how high. So
I hope Dean Skelos.
We follow the direction
that's
of the
that's
chair.
Right, absolutely. Jim?
I did not attend the meeting, but some of the people who showed up here this evening and spoke in the public forum reminded me of people I grew up with in my hometown. And I'm especially sensitive when I hear construction people and others come and say, and I thought they were great here tonight, saying that we might have unintended consequences. Because I'm sure out in the hall they said it a different way. But that was one of the reasons the last time when we went around and voted on this public hearing that I voted against the public hearing because I thought that we should spend the amount of time necessary to get it right. And I applaud you for getting all the people here and giving folks an opportunity to talk about those kinds of things because I mean, I have some knowledge of it, and it's very important not only for the economics in the county, but the economics of these organizations that we're talking here tonight to have it done right, because I don't really think that anybody is drastically opposed to it, but I think we need to get it right for them and so that we can continue to do the things that we know they know how to do correctly.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, Frank?
Give me one more. Mike, Jim just reminded me, can you say what we might be doing, or perhaps Carol, what's next in the process of that?
Why don't we take that up in the Facilities Committee report?
Okay? Yeah. That's fine. Thank you.
I do want to say, I want to make sure this doesn't take forever, and I think sometimes things will take as long as you give it. So I hope we'll get a report back to this body, you know, certainly by the first April meeting, and have something done before the end of May at the very latest. So anything else on your report, Mike?
That's all. Do I have another resolution?
You have C.
C, appropriation from contingent fund to develop a smart work training program for Environmental Health Division of Health Department and Information Technology Services. I so move.
There's Dooley seconds.
This is $5,500, and it's a continuation of what we think is a successful test last year of the Smart Work initiative.
Any questions? Nathan?
I just have a comment that this position, that I think this is great that we're doing this. Actually, in my healthcare system at Guthrie, we just posted a executive position that's only their full dedication. They have to be lean trained. And their entire job is doing smart work type of initiatives throughout the system. And so this is a real good way to go, and I think a lot of other industries have been doing it, are doing it, and so it's good that we're doing it too here.
Where do we apply?
All right, thank you. Short form roll call.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? Thank you, that's unanimous.
Thank you.
Okay. Next committee is Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Pam McAsee, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The Planning Committee is scheduled to meet tomorrow afternoon at 3:30, if the Lord is willing, the creek don't rise. The latest weather forecasts have softened the blow a little bit in terms of what's anticipated, but we don't know yet. So I'm going to plunge ahead and continue to have the meeting scheduled, and if the weather gets too bad, then we'll have to cancel it. But I think we should just try and do it. Thank you. That's my report.
All right. Any questions for Pam? Thank you, Pam. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you. I just want to make one comment before I do my resolution about the governor's budget. I did not see the presentation this afternoon, but I've been talking to the county administrator since we passed the last budget, and we talk a lot about how much we don't have and what the future looks like. And I'm really interested to hear Brian and others talk about what we should do, not about what we should cut, but what are the things we have to do. And we actually began that process last year, and we were unable to, we were able to almost make our levy goal, but we didn't quite make it. The only thing I can think about this year is if the 2% tax cap, it's going to make our job real easy for one sense. We know what our levy is going to be, but it's going to make our job extremely difficult to make the choices that Brian and others are talking about around the room. And, you know, I'll leave it at that at this point. We had a meeting last week and passed a few resolutions that were under the consent agenda, and we had gotten that wonderful information that we got $42 from New York State, and we also got $3,200 at the same meeting. So we're just knocking them dead in revenue from New York State. So let me move to Resolution E, which was in your folder, the authorization to pay road control contract negotiator costs from the contingent fund, and I would move that.
And Nathan seconds that. Any questions? Dooley?
Is it your best guess that this will cover the entire amount, or is this just the first installment?
I think right now it will cover what we are working on. Will it cover an arbitration if we potentially get there? No, it will not. It's an hourly rate that Romer, Wallins, Minot, and Gold are now charging us, and we think it will cover what we're involved with right now, but not forward if we have to go to arbitration.
Patton and Peter,
Could I ask David where we stand right now with our contingency fund?
Before tonight, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, before tonight, you had an allocation of it was $900,000 plus. There was money. The baseline contingency is around $800,000 because so there has been no draws in 2011.
Okay.
And this is going to be a 2011 expense.
Okay. Thank you.
Peter?
Pass.
Did I see somebody else? Okay. Are we ready to vote? It's another short form roll call.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Thank you, Jim. And anything else?
No. Thank you.
That graph that Joe sent around, did it? I was hoping it would come up here. Okay. All right, thanks. All right, Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
Yeah, we had our first meeting of the year yesterday at 3:30. It was mostly the last meeting of last year, picking up a couple of items that hadn't been done. One thing that we did do is we had a discussion about what we might want to do differently this year than we had done previously in the public service, public safety. And we decided that it would be a good idea to schedule a rather lengthy series of meetings, which might cover most of the rest of, might cover the rest of the year, to hear reports from the various departments that report to the Public Safety Committee, not on what they do, but what their concerns are. What is, what does the future hold for them? What should we be thinking about? What should we be worrying about? What opportunities are there? What problems are there that can be seen? Just to have us members of the committee firmly understand exactly what it is that we're facing in that area. And our next meeting will take place on February 22nd at 3 o'clock. That's my report.
Thank you, Peter. Any questions? Dooley.
Peter, the lengthy presentations that you just described, would they be at regular meetings or at extra meetings?
At regular meetings.
Thank you.
Jim?
I'm not talking about public safety. I believe the second meeting of this month, we are going to have HR here for a presentation before the ledge, and it is going to be the beginning of the short, concise, precise presentations to the legislature.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Anything else for public safety? Thank you, Peter. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean, Claire Bourne, Chair.
WDAC met last Wednesday. We had a wonderful working meeting, and I appreciate those of you legislators who came through, especially Jim, who was coming for something completely different, but was very helpful in helping us. We've taken our draft, very draft, comprehensive diversity plan and began to tighten it up so that we can move along and have a final document, or final draft at least. So I appreciate all of the help and thank you very much for the appointment as chair of the WDAC this year. So that's what we're continuing to do at our next meeting, is to work even harder in getting this draft out of the way so you can see the document coming through. That's my report.
Thank you, Leslie. Any questions?
That was an awesome meeting. It was really good.
Good.
Thanks, Joe, for the food.
Oh, yeah.
It went a long way. It's a three-hour-plus meeting, so we needed food.
Not setting any precedent, but...
WDIC always had food because we believe in the culture of feeding people when they work hard.
All right, that's great. Thank you. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The Health Committee will meet on the 9th at 3:30. Two items. One, I just want to ask the committee members to pay particular attention to the youth services agreement that's being distributed with your agendas. We were anticipating having an individual from that department come and review the agreement with us. Both JJ and Amy will be at the NYSAC conference next week, so they will not be able to attend. They'll be there in another capacity. The reason I wanted to mention that is the contract specifies for your municipalities that we have to alert them a year in advance of the contract expiring so that they can make their plan in their town budgets for what they want to do. So please take some time to review the agreement. We won't have a lengthy discussion on Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, but we certainly will have it in March. The other item, and I'd like to turn to Joe, is the, if you don't mind, giving us an update on the public health director search.
Search committee met this morning. We have narrowed the candidates down to a manageable list of people that we're going to invite for interviews here. The interviews will be late next week. I think we're still on track to hopefully have a decision in place by the end of the first quarter of this year.
Jim, and then Julie.
My question is, are there any familiar names on that list?
I don't know who you know.
No, Nathan did not apply.
No, I know one I had lunch with. No.
Julie?
Will the interviews be open for other legislators to just observe? As
I'm
we
looking
did
at
last
my
time.
Fellow search committee member.
All the legislators have sat in, and that's just fine. They haven't participated in the questioning, but they've been able to sit in.
Right, just for observing.
Yes.
Just yeah.
That would be appropriate.
In that case, will you let us know when they are?
Sure.
Last time you had two rounds. Is this the first set of interviews?
I think so. We're looking at three or four coming in on the first round. So it could be the first round, and then the finalists could come back. I'm drawing a blank on whether it's Thursday or Friday of next week that we are meeting.
Friday
of next week.
I think it's Friday.
The 11th.
Okay. Now, as far as budget
Frank,
goes.
Peter had his hand up.
Frank, I have a question. Did you say that there was a new proposal about recreational services that somehow is on our tables?
We have a five-year agreement with the Rec Partnership, the county, and all of the towns and the city. And that contract agreement has to be renewed every 5 years. Well, this one happened to be written for 5 years. And that will be coming up for review next year. But we have to alert the municipalities a year in advance by agreement in the contract so they can work it into their budgets and they can get some sense of whether they want to stay in or not.
Okay.
So, but this legislature will eventually see that as well.
Okay.
Frank, you want to say something else?
I just want to make sure that the $42 that David has goes to Joe so we can do the interviews. Maybe we can buy food.
Sure, that'll cover it.
Right.
All right. Anything else for Frank? Okay. Thank you very much. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Yes. The committee will be meeting this Friday, February 4th at 9:30 in the morning. One of the big items on the agenda will be a report by Don Ellis on weights and measures. So anybody who'd like to hear some more detail on the 1,792 devices that he tested last year on our behalf and other features of his work is welcome to join. I also request that members stop by my desk if they can tonight in our break, if we have one. Any illusions I had about easing into this chairpersonship were dispelled. We have not fully confirmed our meeting date for the meeting time for the upcoming year, so I would like committee members to touch base on that. Also dispelled the first day I took office, we had our Hanshaw Road public informational meeting in which we distributed the maps to the residents and had over 60 people come out to that. I was looking for a smooth transition. Tonight's business was a prime example. And Dooley, Mike Lane, and others, I mean, we just could not be doing this without a group effort. So I thank everybody who's been involved. Last night's meeting, I think we've already proceeded to try to map out how we will respond, certainly first by deciding that we weren't ready and would like to give the many fine comments a chance to gel and be considered. There are probably three major areas of this that we just want to make sure we have given careful consideration to. This is the road preservation, the legal basis, which I believe GO has really masterminded well, and Jonathan's work. The technical specs we'll look at, and the timing in relation to our towns. So we will step back and look at all of that. I've been on the phone a lot of the day with Mike, Jonathan, Bill Sesney, Joe, Martha, and we're hoping to bring something to possibly to our March F&I meeting. In fact, that is March 4th. We'll see. But our ability to do that may depend partly on how much it snows between now and then, because of some of this work really will require Bill Sesney, who I want to give special thanks to for showing up here tonight. I mean, he had been out there since 4 o'clock this morning. He's clearly going to be up overnight and out there 4 o'clock the next morning, tomorrow morning as well. So I thank you, Bill, in particular. So we're working on a schedule of how to bring this back and present and involve all of the right people. I really do aim to work closely with my vice chair. I'm really glad that Dooley has been there. I invite Dooley now to add anything to this report that I have left out and to answer other questions that
you have to answer the question.
Yes, and I will answer your other questions. Peter.
Yeah, Carol, I don't know a lot about this road damage issue, but listening to the people testifying tonight, I would think that what we're trying to do is to draft a law which somehow makes people that own trucks, pay proportional to the damage that they inflict on the road, and that it's not particularly aimed at out-of-county trucks or in-county trucks or whatever. It's just a way of recovering the cost that trucks inflict on our taxpayers. Is that correct? I mean, is that what we're trying to do?
Yeah. Without getting into committee discussion here, I will say that the, as I understand it, the state requires us to address not any particular industry, to not single out any particular industry. So, yes, we're looking for a way to. And I think we've designed a prototype and a way to try to address damage to the roads, unusual temporary damage to our roads. But I think that that we will have further discussion on whether the law, the legal basis, which I think we've pretty much established that the legal basis that we are directions we're going seem to be the right ones that we want to be using, and we. A lot of the comments were sort of the technical specifications. Are these the right numbers to be using? And that's a lot of what we'll be looking at. The other set of comments were had to do with the last night as well, even more so the timing in relation to our towns.
Okay, I mean, if I could just finish with one question, like for instance, the man who says, look, we ought to be worrying about the people that have got thousands of trucks coming up full, one after the other, instead of somebody that's just coming up to build a house. Well, I would have thought the answer to that person is, we have done that. The people that have got thousands of trucks coming in will pay a whole lot more than the person that is just building one house. That's right, is it not?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Let me also say, though, that some of the confusion has been, and some of the reason that we thought it was worth it to spend a little more time on this, is that there are two elements here. We will pass a law this resolution that asks our staff to design a process, and to finalize a process. We do not have that process fully designed and in place. So some of the questions are things that couldn't be answered last night and you wouldn't necessarily expect us to be able to answer them in advance of us as a body deciding to proceed and ask our staff to spend their time on this.
Okay, thank you.
Frank?
Carol, can you briefly just outline again how you intend to involve
the folks that volunteered from the industry side to help?
My intention is to start by looking at their comments in more detail than we've been able to do between late last night and tonight's comments and now. So we will start with that and decide whether we need to. We certainly, any meetings that we have on this are going to be open to the continue to be open to the public. The suggestion that came up about appointing a committee of business people to write our law, we will have to determine what the proper way is to solicit input. I also see Jonathan looking like I want to give you the opportunity to add to this if either this question or the last that I answered.
I'm not sure I could answer that question. I understand the question, but obviously, I'm not really sure I can answer the question. I mean, the way to involve input of people who want to have input, I think we'll have to consider that before we have a new draft. I mean, obviously the big issue, or one of the big issues, the issue of most concern is what it should cover and what it should not, and what are good thresholds and what are not. And certainly, we're going to have to propose some sort of different sort of threshold if we're going to change the law. And the way that individuals with the comments would make input, I'm not sure. Perhaps I'm just not sure. But I think they'd have to have some way, I agree, of them expressing what they feel would be appropriate thresholds.
I'd really like the committee to be empowered, the committees to be able to do their work, and they'll report back to us. Mike?
Yeah, I was sort of going to say that Carol and I will be discussing this, and we'll take it to the committees. And I think it's a great idea to involve some of the folks that were at the meetings here that had positive suggestions as we're doing that. But exactly how we're going to do that, we've got to decide.
And we don't all have to weigh in on that right now. Pat, is there something new?
I was going to say something very similar to what Mike just said.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Carol. All set? All right. We will have a break because we've got an executive session. So facilities and infrastructure folks, go over to Carol's desk and check in about the calendar. I'm glad I got this. Finally got this around because I want the camera to see what this says. The little red one here is, well, here the black bar is where the 2% cap would be. Obviously, if inflation is the governor, then it's 1.2%, so it's about here. So just Medicaid is more than the 1.2% cap. The big yellow bar is. Am I doing the kindergarten teacher thing here? Big yellow bar is retirement. So this is, this is what we're facing here with a cap.
Madam Chair, it's not what we're facing. It's what the people out there are going to be looking at for reduction in all kinds of services like sheriff's road patrols and road maintenance and other things, human service agencies. That's what that means.
Of course. Thank you very much, Mike. And I think for the sake of, a lot of people say they don't really know what the county does. I think they're going to find out because a lot of those things we're going to have to stop doing. I have a report from the Capital Plan Review Committee meeting last Thursday, and hang in there. This is a little long and a little complicated, but I need to run through some thoughts for you about what went on in the committee last week. We heard from LaBella consultant together with Arell on the space study of the courthouse, the mental health building, and the human services building. The courthouse, they finally now have estimates, cost estimates for the construction and renovation that would have to be done to this building. Arell is now sort of going off, and he'll be negotiating with the state, with the Office of Court Administration, as to how much is going to be our responsibility and how much the state will pay. And We didn't spend a lot of time on it, but it's going to be a tough pill to swallow, I'm afraid. We will wait and see, and I think AREL has certainly done very well for us in the negotiations so far. A couple of items from the review of the courthouse building was that they do believe that they can fit the several staff who are Office of Court Administration staff now in the old library, bring them over into the renovated space here. So that's good news, because those are folks in the Justice Center. We're providing the space right now, and if we move those programs out over, in the long-term picture, they'll be able to fit them in here. The base contract, we've talked about this before, the base contract is Office for the Aging moving out and a number of renovations to almost every floor in the building, but it does not include the legislature moving out. That is an alternate that they've done the estimate on. The idea would be that the legislature, they have designed it in that the Supreme Court would move over here. We have stated very strongly we see that as an alternate, not a mandate. The court personnel at our previous meeting had said it was a strong preference that we move out and they move in here, but not a mandate. So it is something that could be a future phase, a second phase, but we have kind of put a line in and said this is not something we feel we need to do right now, because the Supreme Court does have space. We are providing that space, and that is what our responsibility is. The mental health building was reviewed. They looked, at all the uses of all the space in that building, and basically, to see if there's any nooks and crannies, any unassigned space. The answer is no. There's basically no space that's not being used and used efficiently for those operations. The fifth floor is rented to the Alcohol and Drug Council. So if we had to have that space, we could move them out. But that's a use where our clients are really seeing the mental health staff as well as the Alcohol and Drug Council staff. So it's a very beneficial arrangement for our clients. The Human Services building, there's a little bit more room to move. Looking at all the spaces there, and if you sort of move people around, they did identify just under 2,000 square feet that's unassigned. Now, that doesn't literally mean it's not being used, but that it could be reallocated. This does not include, on the first floor, about 500, I think, square feet for the central services, kind of mailing facilities, mailroom sorting, and about that much space for the credit union. So those are two spaces in addition to 2,000 square feet unassigned. We had a fairly long discussion about moving day reporting to the Human Services building. As you know, we've already made a decision that we need to move our programs out of the old library. The sooner the better. So the question of would it fit into the Human Services building was discussed at length. There are a lot of different issues. It's not clear whether it'll work physically, but we do. The first thing we really needed to do was clear that we don't have a firm estimate of what space day reporting really needs. We know what they use right now, but they basically were put into that space because we had the space. So there is an estimate that was done a year or so ago. Ed Marks and Pat Buchel are going to work on kind of updating that and making sure we know what the space needs for that program are. And then at the next meeting, we will take another look at that. We discussed the Carpet Bazaar building and discussed the space. We looked at the list of programs that we currently lease that are in other places, like Workforce, the One Stop Center, Human Rights Commission. And pretty much none of them would fit efficiently or use all of that space, so there wasn't a natural fit with any of the uses that we currently have. It did turn out that it looks like the Human Services Coalition, which we support with rent, some of their space, their occupancy costs we pay, they could fit, and they are in a position where they need to move, you know, and very shortly, maybe by the end of this year, because that building will be replaced. So that was something that we discussed at some length. The we did talk about, as I sort of projected last meeting, about a possible second floor on the Carpet Bazaar building. Ed Marks said that, you know, if we're going to do it, this is the time to really think about it. The committee wasn't really keen on the idea, but Ed is going to look at sort of the cost that would be involved in. If we were to do that, what would it cost? But the priorities that the committee really felt strongly about were to plan for the existing Carpet Bazaar building, what would the COFA renovation, what would it look like to renovate for COFA, and if we were to, depending upon who the partner or the use in the front of the building would be, what would that be, what would that look like, and that to find space for the old library programs. You remember we did sort of say that we wanted staff to be looking for replacement space, and they were deferred in doing that because of purchasing the old Carpet Bazaar. So they will turn their attention to that now. And finally, we discussed the Center of Government. We had, if you remember, that Arel issued the request for qualifications for consultants to look at all of our spaces and how might they optimally be housed in the downtown spaces. He had four responses to the RFQ, all of them local. He felt two of them were stronger, sort of stood out as being strong proposals, and he's going to review that and bring a recommendation to the committee at the next meeting. At that point, then, we develop a scope of work and negotiate the fees for those consultants. So we hope that will happen at the next meeting as well, which is February 10th at 3:30. So are there any questions? Pam.
The idea of putting the Human Services Coalition into that building, they would be going into the retail space in the front of the building. Is that what you're considering?
When you think about the retail, you mean the open front that's the way it looks now? You look in the window and you see that whole big front part?
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know if that's where, we shouldn't assume that's where the dividing line would be.
Well, I guess perhaps my question is that I thought that we were making some kind of consideration for having something that had retail in the front as a way to help promote the cityscape and also help to with tax revenue for the city, because we are taking most of that building off of the tax rolls.
Well, we have talked about that, but I think we first had a concern to look at our internal functions since we're buying this building. And just to be clear, the environmental review is still going on, so that's in process. We hope to buy the building. The priority seemed to be, can we consolidate any of our other functions into this building that we're buying and save ourselves money that we're spending on leases or other occupancy costs. So we didn't talk about retail. As Mike said about a possible adding a second story and being, you know, a housing landlord, there might be sort of complications there if we were to rent to retail space. We didn't talk about it. It is, you know, certainly something we could look at. But I think there really was an interest in seeing, did we have some of our own functions that would make sense to incorporate?
Actually, but I just had a follow-up on that. It's a little bit different, but one of when the city was doing its sort of planning and its vision of West State Street, one of the things that they talked about was trying to not have one-story buildings. That in fact the idea was to increase density on the street, but it adds to the whole streetscape in terms of what you have there. So it's just something that I think that we should be aware of, that is what their plans show, is trying to not have one-story buildings.
And that was certainly one of the reasons Ed brought it to us, and that was discussed as a benefit during the committee meeting. it seemed we did discuss, for example, if this body moved and the clerk's offices moved over to the old courthouse, the offices for the staff would likely have to go on the first floor where planning and ITCTC are right now. So perhaps planning could go into a second story above Carpet Bazaar, but that was really seen as a stretch. There has been a study a few years back, do you remember when? About 96, 97, about this body moving into the old courthouse, and it really doesn't work. So we will, our committee will look at that report again, but, you know, they're just not all, you know, all puzzle pieces aren't quite possible. So it seemed at this point we really need to push ahead with, at least the committee felt we should push ahead with filling up the Carpet Bazaar as it is and think about the future development of that block at another time. Julie?
At CPR, the committee was reminded that the city prefers not to have single-story buildings, so it didn't totally escape our notice. And as Martha said, Ed Marks in particular suggested there could be housing upstairs. I think part of our discussion then, someone said, well, then you'd need an elevator. And I was thinking about that after the meeting. I'm not sure that's true. I think if you rent to people who don't require handicap access, you don't have to have an elevator in a building, but I'm not sure.
So, well, since it was suggested as senior housing.
Well,
I don't know.
Yes, senior, okay. Yes, but.
I would also just mention, it's not like we're building a one-story building. You know, the building's there, and this is adaptive reuse of a building that's now empty. So, Carol?
Yeah, I appreciate that you're considering this, my concerns about this had to do not only with this one particular building, it was the eventual thinking was to end up with that building, our current State Street building, and some spaces in between, that would be a disruption to the commercial plan and streetscape plan of the city. In terms of how to proceed to make sure that we keep lines of communication open with the city about this, does it make sense to try to schedule, I don't know, some kind of a meeting, a joint meeting, where we hear a little bit more about, you know, sort of that all of us become more familiar, or those of us who want to become more familiar with their plans for West State Street and the implications of what we might do as we proceed?
I suppose we have to make our own decisions. We have to move out of this building, and we have to do what's fiscally responsible for us, and that's got to be our priority. I will say that Pam joined Ed and me at the city's economic development meeting earlier this month, and she'll continue to come to those meetings. We did discuss it again this month, and you know, it comes up pretty much every month with the city people. Jim?
Someone please inform the family medicine doctors that who I believe are on one story. Okay.
Okay, anything else? All right, thank you very much. We have the minutes of January 4th and January 18th. Is there a motion for the minutes? Peter moves both minutes or one?
Both.
Both, and Will seconds those. Any discussion? Julie?
I don't know whether the motion included any proposed changes or not. If not, I'd like to offer them.
I assume they didn't because nobody said so. So you have an amendment then?
Just to the January 4th meeting. There are two pages printed out and in your red folders.
So there's a motion to amend the minutes. Is there a second? Peter seconds those. All right. Any comments?
There's a typo in one of them.
The word whole?
Yes.
Should be while. And a period at the end of the sentence. So. All right, with those two changes, Jim?
I just want to inform you that I'm going to vote against the minutes until we get the new policy. Kathy Herrera is not here, so I wanted to say that out loud.
Okay. All prepared to vote? All in favor of the amendment to the minute, amendments to the minutes? Raise your hand, please. 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed? That is 12 to 1. Since we are, somebody's missing. All right, so we now have the revised minutes on the table. All in favor of the revised minutes, please raise your hand. Any opposed? They pass 12 to 1. All right. Can I get a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of labor negotiations? Jim moves, Brian seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? All right, we will take a break, be back in your seats at 7:45. Thank you.